Work moves fast. From emails and reports to proposals and updates, you're expected to think clearly, write confidently, and get it right the first time. And every message counts. That's where Grammarly comes in. It gives you everything you need to think, write, and finish in one place. Or anywhere you type and text. You'll never have to switch tools or tabs. Grammarly's AI agents are built for how you work and where you work, so you can find the right words, adjust your tone, and predict how your message might land before you hit send. Your ideas will get a boost, while still sounding natural, credible, and just the way you want. For nearly 17 years, Grammarly has been the standard for responsible AI. It's the premier writing tool that 93% of users trust to get more work done. In a world of generic AI, don't sound like everyone else. With Grammarly, you never will. Download Grammarly for free at Grammarly.com. That's Grammarly.com.
Off the ball. Rugby.
We don't have any Brian O'Driscolls, and that's just the reality. I think our collective has always been our strength, with some brilliant individuals.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the ball daily.
Welcome along. It is Tuesday's Off the Ball. Keith Tracy's here with me. He's here for the full show. How are you, Keith?
I'm great, Will. How are you?
And Cameron Hill is back as well. How are you, Cameron?
I'm good, Will. Still recovering from that game at the Aviva Stadium on Sunday, but, you know.
Recovering from? So, I watched the game. I wasn't entirely shaken by it. Mm-hmm. I didn't really care about the 21,000 part. So, I saw all these people going, this isn't particularly the best advertisement for the league because it's not totally full. And maybe they should have put everyone in the lower tiers and whatever else. So, Daily Mount would have had, what, 4,750? The Aviva had 21,000 people. Surely getting 21,000 people to a League of Ireland game is something to celebrate.
Absolutely. And listen, you've got to, like, the variables at play here will obviously determine how big a crowd comes out. The weather hasn't been particularly good the last while. I feel like that probably put a few people off maybe purchasing a last minute ticket. If you really want to get closer to the attendance from last year, I think Bohemian Shamrock Rovers is the only chance you really have at getting that. In terms of the quality of the game, someone made the point, and I think it's probably fair, that the flooding and the various bad weather and yellow and orange weather warnings over the last few weeks would probably have hampered a lot of both Bo's and Pat's pre-match preparations and their ability to get on the pitch ahead of the match. My whole thing is on it. If we look at it in the future, maybe a June-July date is better for the Aviva game. You get the teams properly. They've got enough football under their belt at that point. Everyone's shaking off the ring rust. Be a great way to get eyes on the League of Ireland ahead of the European fixtures kicking off, especially if two of the teams that'll be involved in European competitions are playing that fixture at the Aviva. Also, the weather's better. You're not competing with the Premier League or anything like that. So maybe that's just food for thought for next time.
So I think it's hard to win, because the big argument is you put game week one at the Aviva Stadium, you accept teams might be a little bit undercooked. They're just coming out of pre-season. We might get a dull affair like we had on Sunday. But the reality is there's a fixture there to focus the mind on the first weekend of the new season. You put it in the middle, I take your point, it's probably going to be more competitive. And maybe there is a correct window to put it in. But don't a lot of the top teams not play each other in that period because they're getting ready to play in Europe anyway?
But that June or July might be the one. I mean, like, yeah, as you say, a lot of those games are front loaded and it means that they don't face each other as much as they're competing on two or three different fronts, depending on whether you're still in the FAI Cup at that point too. But I don't know, it's just, don't you want free attacking football on the big expansive pitch that is the Aviva, and compared to maybe some of the fare that's served up in certain grounds in the League of Ireland? I think it'd be a missed opportunity if you have this, because I don't buy the whole commercial sellout argument at all. I think if you're trying to build something and create this product that people are attracted to, especially fair weather fans or people just new to the league, like, the Aviva's just sitting there. You need to make the most of that. So I don't know. I feel at summer game, a bit more of an atmosphere on a Sunday, where the sun is shining and it's a bit warmer and everyone is in full flight and getting ready and have their eyes on maybe making a real push in Europe. It seems like a no-brainer to me.
Well, before tackling that, Keith, how was your day out with the Aviva on Sunday? The game got in the way, did it?
game got in the way of a really good day. Yeah, it wasn't great, was it, to be honest? I think I was guilty of this. I did commentary of Derry against Sligo on Friday night, and I was guilty. I was looking at Derry, and I was expecting them to be the finished article already. I expected them to sweep Sligo out of the way and just, you know, for it to be an easy enough game for them. It didn't materialise like that, and possibly now in hindsight, I was looking for a little bit too much. They have a whole host of new signings. I think it's very, very difficult to move the ball quickly on an Astro pitch. And Sligo were good. You know, sometimes we can say Derry weren't great, but Sligo were really good. I thought they were excellent. Some of the balls they put into the box were good. And although Derry won the game, I came away probably taken away from what I thought they would have been. And that's probably a better place for Derry to be, rather than people going, they were absolutely excellent and, you know, they're the ones to win the league. Maybe just flying under the radar, which I think they're incapable of flying under the radar with James McLean and their team. But with those little disjointed performances, maybe it just tapers expectations a little bit. And yeah, it was I done a game on Friday night and I done a game on Sunday, and in both of the games I gave goalkeepers man of the match, so sort of sums up my weekend for me.
Just a bit. Your old podcasting buddy Roddy Collins came out with quite the comment, yeah, James McLean. The worst signing Derry have ever made. I can't get behind that.
Well, no, I don't think I can get behind the worst signing Derry's ever made. I understand what Roddy's saying about the, you know, coming at it from a manager's point of view, he's undroppable. I don't think Tiernan Lynch can look at it like that. I think if James McLean doesn't perform, he has to drop him. It's as simple as that. And if you drop him and then the powers that be say, look, he has to play, then that's when the problems really come into it. But I don't see it as Tiernan Lynch is powerless in this situation. And I think James is a very motivated lad. And, you know, we can all highlight what James hasn't got in terms, you know, I'm not saying he's a technically bad player, but he didn't stand out across the water as a technically gifted player. But in League of Ireland levels, I think he will be absolutely fine. But what James does have is a never-say-die attitude. He will run through brick walls. He's always as fit as a fiddle. So I don't see it being an issue with him playing as a holding midfielder. But I do feel he's capable of more. Like he played a lot of games for Wrexham before he came across. It's not like he came across and he's not fit. So I would love to see him, you know, booting up and down the left wing and getting balls into the box. But, you know, maybe only James will know if his body is still capable of that.
Look, maybe Roddy makes fools of us all by the end of all this, but I just think you're bringing back a player who's highly motivated. As you mentioned, he played in the Championship earlier this season. He's in fantastic fitness. Like, he's in great nick.
He's never not fit, is he?
Always has been. He's gone back to his boyhood club, was determined to have a second run there. Even going back to the cup final a few years ago, he was saying, I will finish at Derry. He's got his brother back at the club as well. They've got a strong squad. I think if Tiernan Lynch needs to rotate him out, he can. And I don't think he'll feel obliged to play him every single week.
But
he's a no-brainer of a signing.
The Patrick McLean one is a little bit strange because he's been let go by Derry twice. So it's like Derry has had a look at him twice now at this stage and thought, yeah, you're not for us. But I think James has sort of dictated in the background, and I don't know that for a matter of fact. It's just something I've put two and two together.
I think it's a fair suspicion, Dan.
I think it's a fair suspicion, yeah. I think that's a fair way of putting it. And I know Roddy alluded to that as well. And if James has that sort of pull in the background, then you can think that possibly that would be a problem. But Tiernan Lynch, I don't think, can ever approach it like that. But you've got a centurion. There isn't a whole host of centurions knocking around the league. I mean, I can only remember Damien Duff ever being the only other centurion to play in the league. Somebody will probably correct me down the line. But yeah, I would rather, if I've never managed a club, but I would rather have James McLean in my team than not in.
Yeah, and in the interest of balance, well, Roddy Collins did sign his own son when he was at Derry City as well, yeah, and he's thrown accusations of nepotism and so on. You can WhatsApp us, by the way, 087-9180-180. The game itself, and to Cameron's point, you're getting 21,000 in, maybe not having what it could have potentially had in the summer. Maybe as a game could have been better if it's later on in the season. What's your take on it? Because I spoke to Stephen Kenny about it last week and he said, great, love the idea starting the season there. Would it be better if the game is later in the year?
I see it from both sides. Why not have one at the start, one in the middle and one at the end? I mean, why does it have to be either the start or the middle and it's either or? I understand what Cammy is saying about there's probably only three or four, maybe even three, teams that could get the attendances that the Aviva would demand. But from a player's point of view, give me the Aviva every day of the week. I would rather play in front of 21,000 than 4,500. It's as black and white as that for me. What I would say on the matter is, though, when I was watching the game, not that, you know, Alan Reynolds didn't want to win the game towards the end, but I just felt if that was in Daly Mount, maybe they rolled the dice that little bit more. In front of 21,000, fourth game, I know it's a Bowes home game, but it's literally an away game. Maybe there's an air of, don't lose this opening game of the season. And I totally understand that. But yeah, from a player's point of view, give me the Aviva every day of the week.
All right, let's switch across to what's happened in football tonight. So Michael Carrick can go into that almost uncharted territory of 5 wins in a row.
But he's insisting, Will, that no one at Manchester United is getting carried away with their winning run. They're aiming to make it 5 wins from 5 under the former midfielder when they travel to Premier League strugglers West Ham tonight. Carrick wants his players to enjoy their improved form, but also to recognise that nothing has been achieved yet.
You definitely take the confidence and the feeling from the games that you've had, knowing you can go into the next game with a little bit more feel-good factor about it. But I guess the big challenge is knowing what's got you there, and all the hard work and the preparation, and then what it takes to win a game of football at this level is tough. So never assuming the next one's just going to be all right.
It's an unchanged starting 11 for Michael Carrick tonight from that win over Tottenham at the weekend. While for West Ham, there's just the one change. Freddie Potts comes in place of Callum Wilson. That kicks off at 8:15, Will.
I think when it comes to this, Keith, that consistency of selection has actually been quite important. I was intrigued to see if it was going to be the same 11. Same system, same personnel of players he's used for the last few weeks. The joy of the situation with them getting knocked out early in the FA Cup is that they now have only got one competition to focus on. But it seems that Michael Carrick has now found a system and personnel to work.
Yeah, and again, he hasn't gone in there and, you know, done things that we all thought, you know, I didn't see that one happening. It's Bruno Fernandes is playing in his best position. Luke Shaw is playing in his best position. Harry Maguire has become fit. Casemiro was not getting too high up the pitch as to expose his legs in behind. Kobbie Mainoo was coming in a more holding midfielder role, which suits him more than it suits Bruno Fernandes. Amad Diallo is playing higher up the pitch, and Mbeumo through the middle. These are all basic things that if you'd have given a novice manager and had a look at the team when Ruben Amorim was setting them out and going, which way would you set this team up? It's pretty much what 9 out of 10 people would have done. So, you know, I wouldn't be giving Michael Carrick too many pats on the back, but to go and beat Manchester City, to go and beat Arsenal, to go and beat Fulham, he's been really, really good. I've enjoyed the way they're playing. And I was saying to you off air, Will, I like to watch Manchester United. Notoriously, I've loved to watch them over the last couple of years because I feel like there's a bit of a car crash coming and a big talking point in a negative sense. Now tonight I'm looking at United and thinking, I'm looking forward to that game because of the football they play. Mm. Under Michael Carrick, it's high tempo stuff, a lot of long balls, a lot of penetration in behind. And I like it. I really like what I see. But I would say that the next question is, should Michael Carrick get the job? At the end of the World Cup, there's going to be a whole host of elite managers that come available, and that's probably where Michael Carrick comes undone. But if he keeps going the way he's going, he's making an awful lot of noise.
It's a double-edged sword of an interim manager. So if the interim manager does well, as we saw with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer before, straight away the clamour comes to give him the job fully. Mm. Now, I appreciate that you could turn and say, look, this guy was sacked by Middlesbrough not that long ago. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he gets them, say, inside the top five, they qualify for the Champions League. People point out that, you know, they looked in trouble. They were about to take on Man City and they're about to take on Arsenal. And he goes on this run of wins that propels them ahead of other teams. I think if he keeps them steady between now and the end of the season, it's hard not to give him the job.
It would be hard not to give him the job, but if you're a Manchester United bigwig and you've got Thomas Tuchel in the line and you've got the likes of Oliver Glasner and you've got Michael Carrick, you know, I would be looking at what happened with Ollie at the wheel. And I know he did really well in his interim and then he came in and for a while it wasn't bad, and then ultimately it ended in failure. You know, you're sort of reading the headlines before they even happen. If you do give it to him, you understand that people are going to say, oh, it's another Ollie at the wheel and it's going to be doomed to fail. But it's very difficult to look the other way when he's doing what he's doing. I wouldn't want to be in the Manchester United board at the minute, because it feels like you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. It feels like the right thing to do, if Carrick keeps doing what he's doing, is give him the job. But you feel there's loads of knives waiting in the background if they do that. And if they don't do that, obviously they will say, well, why didn't you give it to the man that was getting a tune out of him in the first place? It's a rock and a hard place at the minute with Manchester United, but yeah, I'm not sure what they do.
Yeah, well, look, maybe with Solskjaer, the mistake was it was after the PSG result, everyone got caught up after that, and that effectively got him the job. What's happening in the rest of the half seven games, Cameron?
Well, you've got 3 games kicking off at 7:30, Will, and Tottenham boss Thomas Frank is refusing to admit that his side are in a relegation battle. They host Newcastle tonight as they search for their first domestic win of 2026, 15th in the standing so far, just 6 points above the drop zone.
There's no doubt we desperate to win games, desperate. That's the main thing. That is, can we go out there and get 3 points? That will be very good, and then climb from there and look forward. That's what we need to do, and that's the main focus.
Well, Newcastle head into the evening hoping to end a run of five games without a win in all competitions. It's a sequence that's seen Eddie Howe's side slip to 12th in the table after conceding 13 goals across those matches. The manager knows things need to change quickly.
We haven't defended our goal well enough. That's cost us in those games. So I think it's a simple thing to say and sometimes a difficult thing to execute, but we need to find solutions to our defensive vulnerabilities.
Three changes for Spurs from the defeat to Manchester United at the weekend. Radu Dragician is in for the suspended captain Christian Romero, with Jed Spence and Yves Bissouma also in the starting side. Anthony Gordon leads the line for the Magpies, with Dan Byrne and Anthony Elanga and Jacob Ramsey returning as well. Sandro Tonali and Johan Wissa dropping out.
Yeah, Spurs' last five games, that 2-0 defeat at Old Trafford at the weekend, the fight-back point against Man City in the 2-2 draw the week before, the 2-2 against Burnley, 2-1 defeat to West Ham, and that late 3-2 defeat against Bournemouth last month as well. Are they too good to go down, Keith?
I don't think anybody's ever too good to go down. That old West Ham team, where I think Michael Carrick was in it and Joe Cole back in the day, I thought they were too good to go down. So you're never too good to go down. I look at Spurs, and what you see in the Champions League and what you see in the Premier League is totally night and day. But I think I'm in a bit of a privileged position that I'm not a Spurs fan, and I'm looking and I'm thinking I'm prepared to hold judgment on Thomas Frank because the injury list is so extensive. And I know other Spurs fans are saying that not good enough, we need to get rid of him. But I don't think you can judge him, because, like, let me just read this out to you. Udogie, Richarlison, Maddison, Vergwell, Bentancourt, Kulusevski, Kudus, Porro, Romero has a 3-game ban because of his red card, Ben Davis and Danso. That's a mental list. That is absolutely mental. And, you know, most of them would be starting players as well. It's not like the fringe players, and he's exaggerating the players he's lost. One thing I think is a stick to use to beat Thomas Frank with is the tactics have remained exactly the same, even though the personnel is starting to dwindle away. I don't think you can stay with the same tactics when you start to lose your technicians on the pitch. You've got to sort your tactics out. And he hasn't done that. It still became too difficult. And this game against Newcastle, Barnes, Alanga, Gordon, Willock and Ramsey are all starting. They're really, really going top heavy. So it looks like Newcastle are going to try and blow Spurs out of the water. And when you look at Eddie Howe just saying there that we don't defend well enough, they don't have a lot of defensive-minded players on the pitch. I mean, Bruno Guimarães is the other of those six attackers. He's good going forward, and he put the boot in going backwards, but it's not his main attribute. And then you've got Kieran Trippier, who likes to get forward, and the other three are centre-halves. You've got three centre-halves, an attack-minded right-back, and everybody else is attack-minded on the pitch, yet he's telling you, we don't defend our goal very well.
Right.
Try putting some defenders on the pitch then.
You saw me, 7:30, let's get this on and hope it's a goal fest. Newcastle leave themselves wide open at both ends of the field. We've heard from the Irish rugby camp as well, Cameron.
Yes, indeed. Ireland continuing their preparations for this weekend's visit of Italy in the Six Nations. They're hoping to bounce back from a disappointing defeat away to France last Thursday. Head coach Andy Farrell admitted after that game in Paris that he was disappointed by the lack of intent and fight from his players. Scrum coach John Fogarty reveals that it has caused the backroom team to reflect on how they prepared the squad.
It's something we've talked about, because you go back over everything, don't you? Like, you go back over everything and you kind of say, right, was there clarity? Did we drive clarity? Did we give them enough opportunities to show intent in the week? Did we highlight that, etc., etc., etc.? One of the things Irish teams do really well is, in a short space of time, they get their detail ready. Something I've been thinking about is, have I been focused too much on the tactical, technical stuff? And not enough on the intent side of things, and you know, there's a lot to get themselves when they come out of the provinces in a short space of time to get ready for a game. It's the same for every other team, but I wonder sometimes, I'm not talking about the other coaches, I wonder sometimes for me, do I not lean into the intent side of things and how we're going to make each other feel in those moments, as opposed to the technical tactical stuff. That's what I reflected on, and does that have an effect on how I'm preparing the guys? I can't say how the lads were feeling and how they got to that point where they didn't just deliver physically, but that's what I reflected on.
I think Patrick on the WhatsApp 0879180180 is still feeling the frustrations of the Stade de France last Thursday. Was this in the Sports News? Rugby coach was on, which was the clip we just heard. Spending less time in tactics and more in attitude. I would hardly call Cameron kicking the ball to the opposition a tactic.
I don't know. It's an interesting comment from John Fogarty. They seem to be a lot more introspective this time around. Like, there was a big discussion point after the autumn or during the autumn that we heard so many times from the camp, especially from the coaches, that all the players were training the house down and it was going really, really well. And that just wasn't translating to the pitch at all, especially in the New Zealand and South Africa games. And I feel like there's probably a case for that off the back of the France game too, as to what exactly is going on in training and why is it not being translated onto the pitch. That's a really important part of it all. I mean, if you're looking at the tactics, I know there's been a lot of flack and certain questions being asked of Andrew Goodman and what the attack, how the attack has been kind of mangled and isn't quite what we saw a couple of years ago from Ireland. I would point out that it took Mike Catt until the tail end of his second Six Nations before their attacking profile really clicked under Andy Farrell in 2021. And then, you know, they just went on in leaps and bounds and continued on an upward trajectory. So there was a case that after the Lions, they really needed to update what they were doing. Mm. And they have looked at it and they are applying something else and they're trying to go with the trend in rugby of this massive emphasis on kicking. Maybe it didn't click against France. I would urge caution and maybe a little bit more patience, to be honest.
Okay. Steve Bortwick is named his England team as well.
Yeah, England captain Maro Itoje in the starting team to face Scotland in the Calcutta Cup this weekend. Back in the second row in one of two changes from their 48 points to 7 win over Wales on Saturday. The other switch in the pack sees Luke Cowan-Dickie start at hooker for that trip to Murrayfield. That's a straight swap with Jamie George, who's in a 6-2 split on the bench. And Finn Smith is among the replacements after recovering from injury. He replaces his namesake Marcus Smith in the 23.
Aidan tried to steal your thunder a little bit on this story by including it in the news. This is what happens if there's an interesting sports story, it gets bumped into the news.
Yeah.
Tell us about the Norwegian athlete at the Winter Olympics who's got caught for cheating.
Well, he's admitted to cheating, not even caught, but he admitted live on television after claiming bronze today. So Sturla Lagred came third in the men's 20-kilometre biathlon in Milano Cortina, but he broke down in tears in an interview with Norwegian broadcaster NRK afterwards. "Half a year ago, I met the love of my life," he said, "the world's most beautiful and nicest person. 3 months ago, I made the mistake of my life and cheated on her, and I told her that about a week ago. This has been the worst week of my life. I had the gold medal in life, and I am sure there are many people who will see things differently, but I only have eyes for her. Sport has come second these last few days. Yes, I wish I could share this with her."
I don't know if that pitch is going to work, Keith, to get her back.
It's bold, isn't it? Let's see what comes of it.
I won you a bronze, jeez, baby.
It's not quite the gold, but you're still my gold. I don't know if it was a gold medal, if it'd be enough to forgive his infidelity, but yeah, I don't know. It's bizarre. I guess maybe it gives an insight into his mental state at the games. It's been a difficult week after Mitch cheated. Just wait till after the games to admit you've cheated, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It's quite a bold kind of statement. It's that thing in 80s films with the jukebox outside a girl's bedroom window. It's just the Olympic version. But yeah, love of my life. Cheating on her 3 months ago and only telling her a week ago. An interesting approach.
Then bringing it up on the TV.
On national TV, yeah.
Pretty bold as well.
Mm. To an international audience who are now going to take the piss out of the story for the next few days as well. Yeah.
Hindsight, probably not the best
move,
angle.
Let's see how it plays out. And tell us about the medals that are going to be repaired. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, speaking of his medal, he might have to get a repair in a couple of weeks or in a couple of days, Will, because organisers at the Olympics have confirmed they will repair any medals that have cracked, snapped or even broken in two in the opening 3 days. So the medal ribbon has this built-in breakaway mechanism which is designed to release automatically if pulled by force to stop the athletes from being choked. So if you get it caught on something, it'll break away. But the problems first emerged on Saturday when the American downhill skiing champion Breezy Johnson revealed that her gold medal had fallen off her ribbon as she jumped in celebration. Do you remember last or a couple of years ago with the Paris Games that the bronze medals were peeling away?
Yeah.
So not a great track record the Olympics have with medals in the last couple of years.
New medal manufacturers. Breezy Johnson, first of all, is an amazing name. And secondly, I was sure you were going to go snapped, crackled and popped.
Popped.
It was right.
If your medal's popping, that's pretty alarming.
I know, but it was
that's
right
dangerous.
There. It was right there. Right. Cameron, thanks a million for joining us for the news round. Keith is going to stay with us to watch the football.
Off the Ball Daily.